from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for April the 7th, 2019. We're going to be doing a special post-election roundtable today with Brian Bernadoni and Eric Elk. So welcome, as always, to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to the State House and all the way on to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee. We'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, I've put away my Blackhawks gear for the year.
Yeah,
wow,
that's a shame.
50 shots on goal.
Yeah, 45 saves too for Cam Ward,
and who probably played one of the best games of his career.
Yeah, and you know the thing I love about hockey. I think you saw the game the other night too when Chris Kunitz had that goal that was at first called no goal, and then it was allowed. They just mobbed him, and the same thing for Cam Ward. They really wanted him to play yesterday because it was going to be his 700th NHL game. But the respect factor for the veterans in the game of hockey is immeasured. I don't think it's as high in any other sport.
They all want to have these guys get a taste of the ultimate success.
Mm-hmm.
And Cam was just played out of his skates
last night,
and to have that kind of a poor defensive effort in front of you is pretty depressing. And I know that Jeremy Culleton says he's going to be going to fix that.
Yeah, as a former NHL defenseman, I mean, I think he probably has a pretty good idea of what is needed. Yeah, you know, I thought there were some glimmers of some hope later on in the season. You know, I really like what Dennis Gilbert gave him that one game that he played.
Right.
Gustafson had a great offensive season. Forsling, to me, is still scary. Carl Dahlstrom actually played pretty well this year as well. So, and Connor Murphy, I thought, was pretty consistent all year.
Yes.
And not to mention, obviously, the two, the elder skatesmen, as they like to call them, Seabrook and Duncan Keith. So, yeah, that's something that's going to be a huge point of emphasis, because I think both goaltenders could have been even that much better had they had some defense in front of them.
When you allow the number, this year has just been horrible for shots allowed. And that was always the good Blackhawks teams. They would, block. They would be blocking shots.
Yeah, and the other team wouldn't have the opportunity because it'd be in their offensive, their defensive zone the entire game.
Right, exactly. So we make the transition from the brink to the ballpark.
Yes.
And so I was joking with a friend. I posted on Twitter that in her first official act as mayor-elect, Lori Lightfoot bounced at the first pitch. And as someone, a friend of mine, pointed out, this could be a good sign, though, for Chicago.
Okay.
It shows that she's averse to strikes.
Uh-huh.
Think about that.
I like that.
Pretty
good.
Yeah, so I think the Sox are going to be fun this year, you know?
Yeah, I do, too. There's a lot of lot going on there because, you know, Tim Anderson is really starting to come into his own.
Oh, is he ever?
I liked how Ricky Renteria yesterday called it daddy power because he just had his second child the other day. A couple home runs in the last two games actually has six hits over the last two games as well. You know, the question is going to be, the pitching, can it be consistent enough to make things interesting to get towards the 500 mark? I know that that's a goal, obviously, for this team to improve. And there's no really room to go anywhere but up as far as the win total from last year, 62. I'm thinking somewhere in the 70s, maybe, mid-70s if things go well. But pitching could be the starting pitching could be the only issue, but I think Rodon pitched really well in his first couple games. Giolito had a bump in the road yesterday. Reynaldo Lopez hasn't really put it all together yet. And, Ivanova is a veteran presence, and I think Irvin Santana might be called upon here pretty soon as well.
I just think there's a lot to look forward to on the South Side. I really do.
I do, too. Eloy,
Yeah.
A lot of fun. He made a couple of nice catches yesterday.
Well, and then over there's over on the north side, and of course tomorrow the home opener at Wrigley, and oh, that bullpen. Ooh.
Yeah, it lost a member yesterday with Carl Edwards Jr. going down to AAA to work on whatever he needs to work on, which is a lot at this point.
Yeah, hopefully get some innings in down in Des Moines. But, oh, it's just, it's been gruesome. I mean, thankfully with the win yesterday, but it's just gruesome.
I think ballplayers will tell you that the most demoralizing types of losses are those that you have a lead going into the late innings and the bullpen can't hold it and gives it up.
Right. Right. It's well, I mean, it's like hockey and losing in the third period.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. You've got the game. You've got the game, and then kaboom.
Yep.
But, well, I mean, I'm decked in my Cubby blue.
You are.
And,
head to toe.
You know, I'm they're my team, and we'll just see what we'll see what Monday brings with the home opener, where Lori Lightfoot has a chance to
redeem
herself. Mm-hmm. Yes,
I think so. You know, be consistent. You know, don't show favorites on one side of the town or the other. You know, she's got to bounce this one too, right?
I think so. Actually.
In the interest of fair play.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. Can't really complain about the weather for tomorrow.
No,
the opener.
No, and you know,
high maybe in the 70s.
That's unheard of for an opening day in Chicago.
That's for sure.
Well, and I know, you know, Dave and I were both talking off the air about trying to let's push spring a little bit here. So he's been posting pictures of flowers on Facebook.
Nice.
None of them that were actually in Chicago, I should point out.
No, way out west and inside in just the amazing Pike Place Market in Seattle.
Oh, but, Pike Place Market.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
that's where that picture is from.
Is that real? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
That's right. From Pike Place Market.
Okay. The only pictures that I ever see from there are the throwing the fish.
Well,
fish.
If you go on my YouTube page, I've got a video of them throwing the fish, so you can see that also. But no, we did that. We took those pictures 4 years ago when we were on our trip out there.
Yeah, that's the what a fun place.
Oh, it's great.
What a fun place. Now I'm going to push things a little bit. It's brats on the grill today.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not going to be scared off by this talk of intermittent rain and showers. It's time to get the brats going, don't you think?
You can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can cook with an umbrella.
No, it says periods
of scattered showers or thunderstorms.
Yeah. You don't cook with an umbrella.
Well, I'm saying if it's raining, it's worth cooking outside.
No, well, you still cook outside, but you're not holding an umbrella.
Well, you could. I mean, you know, if you're worried about the rain.
You
just trying to protect you, okay?
I'm not that dainty. Thank you, Mr. Mazur. I appreciate your concern, but no, that's not going to be a problem.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, I think some brats and mix up some sauerkraut on the side.
There you go.
I think that'd be a... I don't even know what sports, if any, there is tonight because we have the basketball championship is tomorrow night.
It's tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So. Notre Dame girls. Oh, well, the women's championship.
The women's championship, yep.
Well, there you go. That's worthwhile. All right. I'm all set. You notice a lot of the tourists in town lately, I guess spring break and that kind of thing. So I was on the 29 CTA stretch limo the other day coming downtown, and a guy
that's the one with the darkened windows, right?
Yes, indeed, right, and I sit in the back.
Yeah.
And there's a guy that gets on and he's standing at the fare box with a $10 bill. And the driver says, "We don't make change." And he goes, "Okay." And then he puts the $10 bill in and is standing there waiting for the change.
I mean,
I felt, you know, geez, for $10, he ought to just be able to ride the bus all day long, you know? Just don't get off the bus. But a crazy town sometimes. Just crazy town. There were a bunch of people in town this week.
There was some convention going on.
There was
on.
A convention of weatherization contractors.
Was that what it was?
Yes. And a number of them from the southeastern part of the United States, I will say. And I was in my favorite underground hangout on Lower Michigan at the Billy Goat. And when one guy opined that this place looked like something out of Kentucky. And I'm just trying to grasp that thought, you know. And yeah, it was an interesting cast of characters for this weather.
He was talking about the Billy Goat itself.
Yes,
or
yes,
okay,
yes.
That's something out of Kentucky.
No, I mean the tavern. He was
the
talking
tavern,
about.
Right? Yeah,
not a goat, but which I think he might have been more familiar with given his demeanor. But yeah, interesting group of people there, and not sure they had been to Chicago before.
First time for everything.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
You should do the whole program in your Kentucky dialect there.
Nah, I don't think so.
Y'all listening to the Sunday Spin.
Oh, man.
Do it from a little cabin. Yeah. Got a little log cabin here.
The
on
Sunday Spin.
Sunday Spin on the 18th floor. Of the. It's big.
Yeah, see?
It's way high up here. These tall buildings.
Way high.
They're scary. Ugh. I'm hurting my neck looking up.
Buildings as high as an elephant's eye.
There you go.
It's climbing clear up to the sky.
Oh, this thing's gone off the rails already. Uh-huh. My gosh.
Who had 720 on the in the pool?
720
on the pool, yes. Yeah. Well, and maybe just is a fitting moment, and I showed this to the guys before we went on the air, was on Facebook somebody posted this Charlie Brown cartoon of Charlie Brown waking up at night in bed, and he goes, "Sometimes I lie awake at night and I ask, where have I gone wrong? Then a voice says to me, this is going to take more than one night." Oh, I think that's today's motto here for today's Sunday Spin. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Cassara is here and fielding your calls at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is looking for the pine tar. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNradio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. As I said, up ahead on the show, after the 7:30 news, we'll launch our 90-minute roundtable on the results of last Tuesday's elections with Brian Bernardoni, Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk, who's Director of Strategy for Fulcrum Illinois. That's a subsidiary of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. That's all up ahead. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Time for launching our weekly spin through national politics. We begin with President Trump backing off on his threat to close the border with Mexico after aides furiously work to convince him that it would be economically disastrous to people on both sides of the border. So now he's talking tariffs and a threat to close the border, oh, maybe in a year.
If the drugs don't stop, Mexico can stop them if they want. We're going to tariff the cars. The cars are very big. And if that doesn't work, we're going to close the border. But I think that'll work. That's massive numbers of dollars. So if we don't see people apprehended and brought back to their countries, if we see these massive caravans coming up to our country right through Mexico, coming right through Mexico like nothing. Buses are even given to them. For the last 3 days, it hasn't happened since I said we're closing the border. The only thing, frankly, better but less drastic than closing the border is to tariff the cars coming in. And I will do it, just like you know I will do it. I don't play games.
So we also have in Washington Democrats in the House demanding the last 6 years of President Trump's income tax returns. Trump's lawyers are fighting furiously to avoid the release of it. But Trump says he can't do it anyway because he's still being audited and called it a price of being wealthy and famous.
We're under audit, despite what people said, and we're working that out, as I'm always under audit, it seems. But I've been under audit for many years because the numbers are big, and I guess when you have a name, you're audited. But until such time as I'm not under audit, I would not be inclined to do that. Thank you.
Although it's not really your call, Mr. President. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Continuing a little bit of our spin through the national politics. Plenty of back and forth on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on the president. William Barr has said he expects to present a redacted report to Congress and to the public by the middle of the month. That's not good enough for Democrats. The president lashing out as the release of the report approaches. Some of the Mueller aides in the investigation saying they aren't, they have areas of disagreement with the way that the attorney general has summarized the report. But you have Democratic Congressman Gerald Nadler, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, says Congress should get the full report, not a redacted version.
The Mueller report probably isn't the, quote, total exoneration, unquote, the president claims it to be. And in any event, the committee has a job to do. The Constitution charges Congress with holding the president accountable for alleged official misconduct. That job requires us to evaluate the evidence for ourselves. Not the Attorney General's summary, not a substantially redacted synopsis, but the full report and the underlying evidence. The Attorney General proposes to redact four categories of information from the Mueller report: grand jury information, classified information, information related to ongoing prosecutions, and, quote, information that may unduly infringe on the personal privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties, close quote. The department is wrong to try to withhold that information from this committee. Congress is entitled to all of the evidence. This isn't just my opinion. It is also a matter of law.
That's Gerald Nadler, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman. We also had Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley of Chicago, who was on CNN last week. Quigley, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, says he believes the Attorney General is trying to whitewash Mueller's findings.
I don't doubt at all that the special that Mr. Barr did that. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he was hired to do that. He applied for this job with a 19-page memo saying he disagreed with the theory of law about the obstruction in this case. So I think he was put in place by the White House to do exactly what he did, was to keep this report from getting to the American public and arguing against obstruction, despite a 2-year investigation which said he couldn't be exonerated.
That's Congressman Mike Quigley. Well, we're going to switch gears now and start our roundtable discussion of the results of last Tuesday's elections here in Chicago, the runoff elections. 15 aldermanic runoffs, the treasurer's race, and of course the mayor's race. But I wanted to welcome into the studio here in the Allstate Skyline studio Brian Bernadoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Ulk, Director of Strategic Planning for Fulcrum, Illinois. So, gentlemen, let's start with the aldermanic contest. We still have two that are undecided. Deb Mell in the 33rd Ward, who is now trailing Rosanna Rodriguez-Sanchez by a total of 15 votes. And then in the 46th Ward, Alderman James Kappelman is up by 23 votes over Marianne Lalonde. Of course, we have mail ballots that are still coming in as long as they were postmarked by Election Day, and that count will continue until Friday. So there could still be some movement here as we go through the week. But Brian, you've been kind of a guru on following the aldermanic races. What did last Tuesday tell you?
I feel very good about my report card. After the previous week, we did really well in calling a lot of the races and what's going on. I always hate to see change for change's sake. And, you know, I just got to put it out there. Pat O'Connor is a wonderful alderman. He did a wonderful job for decades in the ward. And it's sorry to see him go. But, you know, I was sorry when when guys like Bernie Stone lost too. I mean, there are certain names that you're just kind of used to that know what they're doing and know what ward operations are. I think you have a slew of aldermen that are, you know, have great, amazing plans for the future of the city. But like Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan until you get hit in the face. And when you think about how tough an alderman's job is, it's not just attending city council. It's churches and community meetings and garbage and sewers and zoning permits and all these other things. It's a really tough job. So I have to give credit to the hundreds of people that decided to run and those that actually made the runoff. It's for us as an organization, from the realtor standpoint, we did really well. We saw the field very well. We saw the field clearly. There were a number of races that we got deeply involved in. We were very happy about the results of Ray Lopez winning overwhelmingly in his ward. We were very, very happy to see Stephanie Coleman do very well, knocking out an incumbent in Tony Folks. There was a number of wards that I would categorize as voter fatigue, where you had people drawn into races that they probably normally wouldn't be drawn into, but they've been in office for a long time. They're a steady name, and people did want some change. But in a couple of those cases, for example, Alderman Sawyer and Alderman Brookins, they were able to pull those races out. I think a big victory was Reboiras. You have Luis Gutierrez out there, a great name, and trying to extend it out to his daughter. And the voters rejected that. Reboiras is a good, I think he's a good gutters and sidewalks kind of an alderman. And that ward was able to return him back.
That's the 30th ward by 300, roughly 300.
Yeah. But I'd also say, too, to that point real quick to jump in, that also shows you can't win on name only.
No.
I mean, you still have to get out there to a point you made a week ago. Get out there knocking on the doors and hustling, you know, to make that contact with every single voter.
It's interesting, though, if you take a look at the wards where there was some real contention, I would say 46, which is still undecided, 43 with Michelle Smith's race. Arguably, you could make the same arguments in 33 and 39 specifically. And arguably five with Alderman Harrison, you have situations where massive development is coming in.
Lincoln Yards?
Or the Obama Library. And I was talking to one alderman during the week, and now the whole idea is everybody was screaming for development. They wanted economic development. They wanted housing. They wanted new development. They wanted new vitality. They get it. And then they get punished for it from folks who say that there's either too much development or not enough affordable housing in the mix and otherwise. And it's...
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, it's a real juxtaposition because, you know, development means jobs. We've all talked about the importance of development, not only good for realtors who I represent, but and developers and durable goods, but organized labor, you know, the hardworking women of the Chicago and Cook County building trades, those are jobs. And when you see these kind of battles in these wards directly related to development, I think that's going to cause some pause amongst a lot of these aldermen trying to make the bigger box decisions that they need to make. I mean, there's still a city west of Western, south of Roosevelt Road called Chicago, where there are major development opportunities, and there are people who are looking at visioning affordable housing and other things well beyond the downtown area. And now you're seeing those aldermen saying, well, I don't know, look what happened to Alderman X, Y, and Z for going down that path. These ward battles were vicious. I can tell you that I have not seen the aggressive nature of these races held out for so long and played out for so long as I did in this last series. 15th ward comes to mind. I mean, just the undercutting left and right, the sign battles, the war battles. I mean, part of me says it's fun to watch, and it's Chicago politics, and you know, this isn't beanbags, right? But I always worry about the public discourse and debate. You know, did we really find out in many of these wards the issues that matter to Chicago voters, or was this just a matter of mail campaigns
and destroy?
And I saw it in the burbs as well. So it's, for me, something that I always like to see the debate. We're just not sure we got it.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, and Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning for Fulcrum, Illinois. This is our post-runoff election roundtable. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. We're doing our post-runoff election roundtable this morning and talking about the first, talking about some of these aldermanic races. And what do we know about what this next city council is going to be like?
I've kind of enjoyed hearing a lot of the progressives talking about they feel like they've had total dominance. I'm not seeing that. I think when you're able to have folks like Sawyer, Hairston, Lopez, Coleman, Brookins, Reboiras, Cardona, Nugent all win their races, I'm not seeing that movement in the same way that they are. I think they're happy that they gained some seats, but they lost some seats. I mean, Tony Folks was a progressive, gone. John Arena is gone. Right. So I'm not seeing exactly what they're seeing. What I am seeing is a label that's been attached that is exciting for them. But again, once they get into the governing, they're going to find out that this isn't even on a philosophical bent, they're not going to be able to get a lot done right out the gate.
Well, and that's, I think, you know, kind of what I was leading to is the fact that, yes, there's a lot of talk about, you know, a more progressive bent to the council, but the numbers still aren't there to make a significant impact at this point.
I don't disvalue, you know, I don't want to undervalue agenda setting. I mean, I think that's very clear. They're going to go out and they're going to set an agenda, set a broad agenda. But caucuses need leadership. They're going to have to find their own leadership in this thing. And they're going to have to govern. At the end of the day, they still have to manage their ward. And it's easy to talk about all these different things and go to rallies where all your friends are and keep building up those issues. But now all those veils are gone. They're going to have to deal with people who did not vote for them. They're going to have to deal with constituencies, whether they voted for them or not, that need service.
Well, yeah. And we all know, you know, that's the bread and butter is constituent service.
That's it. For the council, and we've talked to a lot of folks over the last week about what it's starting to feel like. They're all starting to caucus. They're starting to get a feel for what's going on. They're trying to get the signals from the mayor and what the mayor would like to see happen. The mayor obviously came in with a mandate, and clearly she's going to want some leadership on her side of it. But competency is a big part of this. I think older, more experienced aldermen are going to still be the people that many of the aldermen are going to go to for direction, counsel, and advice. She hasn't picked a floor leader yet. That's going to take a little bit of time. She hasn't picked a finance chairman. That's going to take a little time. But a mandate like she had is a considerable one, and I think it's premature.
Well, I want to get back to you when we focus more on the mayor's race about the issue of mandate, too. But, Eric?
No, I was just going to say, what happens with aldermanic prerogative? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that.
But how do you have aldermanic prerogative here? And I thought about this. How do you go with aldermanic prerogative and say you get rid of this whole idea of aldermen actually controlling their wards? And all of a sudden, City Hall, now in charge of development. They've got the full Monty. They're all in. And they all of a sudden determine that they want to put development XYZ in your ward. After you saw what happened to John Arena, after you saw what happened, how tough Michelle Smith's race was, how tough some of these other races are.
They could be next.
What are you doing to me? You're going to put this development in my ward, and now all of a sudden
it's like citing a big pig farm downstate. You know,
but then you switch it over, and you realize The PIN numbers that are above the land are free, and you need development if we're going to deal with our property with issues with regards to property tax or pension problems and all these other things that, you know, the more erudite amongst us talk about. You need to have density and all those things. What do you do? You know, I mean, how do you go to the mayor's office and say, I have no longer any leverage to stop anything that's really going on? I've suggested that if we're going to have a real serious conversation about automatic prerogative, I think we're going to need to see a task force come together of stakeholders, whether it be in the development community, in real estate community, building trades, as well as the aldermen and others, to talk about if there's going to be aldermanic prerogative, what are those layers of prerogative? Where does it really come
from? What are the parameters?
Yeah, how does it line up? Because, frankly, the only major power an alderman has really is that zoning power, and it's an incredible power. It's an important power that they've long enjoyed. You strip that away, and I mean, frankly, a mayor, I'm not speaking to this one, but a mayor in the future could definitely use that development power or authority in ways that are probably not what the communities in many extent would want.
I mean, what, you're left with the menu.
That's right. And that menu is not, I mean, $1 million does not go far in the city. I mean, you can have, look, all you have to do is drive up and down any road in the city of Chicago, and you know, those potholes are big.
You're gonna
lose
a kidney or something.
Yeah, you know, it's a little rough right now.
Well, and as much as there is the mayor-elect's talk about eliminating aldermanic privilege, given who's still in the council, I don't know that that's realistic. I mean, it's almost like asking the General Assembly to do term limits.
Look, I think there should be a discussion. I think the discussion is real. When you have aldermen who are trying to, and you know, there's two sides to everything, right? But when you have aldermen that are trying to do affordable housing in their ward, and that ward happens to be, that project happens to be adjacent to another alderman, and that alderman gets involved, you know, those things are going to happen in this city. But I think you got to have that discussion about what this thing actually looks like and what the scope of those development things look like. Otherwise, a mass stripping of it, if I was an alderman, I'd bristle. My spine would get very firm, and I would say no way. But I think the discussion is important, especially when it comes to affordable housing. I mean, that was a major issue in this campaign, and we need to have the discussion that brings in both non-for-profit developers, private developers, and stakeholders, so we're doing this the right way moving forward. And just removing aldermanic prerogative and saying we're going to pop affordable housing in all these communities, you know, the one thing that we've learned over generations in the real estate business is people with money are portable. You know, and if they don't like what's happening in their community, they'll move. And those become really real issues. And again, if that order's coming from the fifth floor that this is what we're doing, a number of aldermen, I think, are going to really push back.
Well, and I have to tell you, yes, affordable housing is just really has surfaced as a major issue in ways I don't think, you know, we would hear it ward by ward kind of thing, but it just, you know, in a totality in the city. And it's a living, breathing issue that does need to be addressed.
A lot of the mail I got up in 46 was all around affordable housing. There was one that had a picture of a couple who had been living under a viaduct off of Lakeshore Drive, and thanks to their alderman, they now had keys and an apartment that they were able to get into. So that was definitely a huge issue that he was running on.
It is a major issue. We'll be talking much more about that. We're speaking with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio on the 18th floor overlooking the Chicago River and Navy Pier. Not quite bright and sunny.
Still nice and warm out there, though.
It is, isn't it? The weather is...
It's coming.
Yes. And then it's opening day tomorrow.
You know, I know you want to jump into the mayor's race, but there's a very important vote happening right now. If you're a big Svengoolie fan, the Rondo Hatton Awards are up. It's an email ballot, but I'm just telling you, you got to support Svengoolie. This is an important thing. Oh, you guys didn't do that. Oh. But there's your Svengoolie plug.
Berwyn gets to vote early and often. Yeah, very much so.
But he's up for a Rondo Hatton Award.
Absolutely.
Support Svengoolie.
Support Svengoolie. And also, we should say congratulations to your wife, Brian, on her victory.
Yes, my wife is now a Park District Commissioner. We're real excited about it. And we want to thank our supporters and thank the Lyons Township Democrats for all the work they did.
There we go. Well, I do want to switch over and talk about the mayor's race. And you still can't get over the Berwyn shout out.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Well, we knew there was going to be the obligatory Svengoolie mention.
Had to happen.
Yes. But so, did any of you expect the magnitude of the victory that Lori Lightfoot had last Tuesday? I mean,
I think I used the word momentum, that she had momentum.
74% more here, than
there
momentum.
There was a moment in the afternoon where you started hearing the turnout was not exactly what you thought it was going to be. And anyone in politics, especially that's familiar with any of the organizations, starts wondering, okay, turnout's down. Where is it down? And is there a surge out of maybe any remnants left of the machine where Tony was in play? But Tony won 20 precincts. I mean,
that's 20 precincts out of 2,069.
So no, the answer is no. I didn't see that math.
But while she won some precincts, she didn't win. Clearly, she didn't win any ward.
There are no wards.
No ward did she win outright.
No, and it looked like from what she had achieved on February 26th, what Tony Preckwinkle got then was about 90,000 votes. And was only on a citywide, that's with 14 candidates. Then you take it to the citywide race, and you've only grown that by about 40,000.
Right. It wasn't very much. I mean, if you look at it, too, between, compared to the 2015 runoff, we're about 67,000, almost 68,000 votes down in terms of the votes actually cast.
Well, let's talk about turnout. So turnout right now, with still some mail ballots being counted, turnout was roughly 33%.
Compared to 41% in 15.
And, well, and 35% on February.
Right.
So what does that tell us here?
Well, the old Democrat in me says that everyone's happy with what's going on, but that's clearly not what's happening. There are so many opportunities for people to actually go out and vote. We've made it so easy for people to vote. We've created almost every single opportunity on the planet for you to take 10 minutes out of your day and do this. It's troubling to me because what you end up having is a smaller and smaller group of people making the decisions for everyone else. Yet in this city, just like any other major metropolis, everyone's going to complain. But very few are actually participating in. And if there was ever an opportunity for people to participate, you had 14 mayoral candidates, you had, hundreds of aldermanic candidates. This was a great opportunity missed by a lot of voters and a lot of Chicagoans, I think.
Yeah, with almost, nearly 1.6 million registered voters to only have 524,000 turn out. That's kind of sad. I mean, early vote was open until the day before, for goodness sakes.
Well, and, even if you didn't vote on the February election, where, and I could understand for some people, like with a candidate field of 14 for mayor,
right,
that's a lot to wrap your head around,
right,
But here it's a one-on-one race. You literally will probably spend more time having your voter registration checked than it will for you to actually cast the ballot.
Right. What was there? There's three, in some places two, but...
Well, you had mayor and treasurer.
Treasurer, and then some
And then maybe an aldermanic.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was in and out of there in, 5 minutes. I think I was number 20 to vote that morning. But yeah, there's no reason folks can't walk over to their local polling place on election day or go early vote.
Now, I have not looked at the most most recent numbers as far as, you know, things like age for who voted or whatever, but I do remember what I saw previously posted, and again, you know, the questions of the younger voters. And, I mean, we all know older voters are a reliable demographic. There was... You know, there was opportunity here and appeals made to younger voters, but, you know, yes.
You know, a good friend of mine, Lisa Druss, put through some legislation down in Springfield, some of you may be familiar, that really was pushing to emphasize the civic participation and getting involved in more electoral stuff. It went through the General Assembly last year. I'm a student of Chicago history, and there was always an overemphasis in the education of children coming up of getting involved in politics or getting involved in your community, that you knew those things. And we saw that trend line go away, that there's less excitement in that thing because there isn't enough emphasis in the classroom. I think we're going to be dealing with that for a while until teachers and families and educators and everyone starts re-emphasizing the importance of civic participation.
Well, we have now as the mandate to teach civics. Yes. That's, I think, what you're talking about, which was not a requirement in schools.
No, and it's shocking.
We have that now in high school, and I understand there's an effort to even try and incorporate it in middle school curriculum as well. I mean, if you want to play, you learn the rules.
Right.
And you know, learn the opportunities.
Well, knowing the process and knowing the rules, if whoever owns the rules, whether it's for the election, you know, whether it's for a debate, whether it's anything, you can own that process, own the rules, and you're assured to do well, typically.
Well, if you want to change the law, know how to change the law.
Well, one of the things that I've been fortunate in my career that I've been around some of the great leaders and a lot of this stuff. And I as we're having this conversation, I'm recalling Reverend Jesse Jackson talking in 1989, 1990. I've never seen him more crestfallen when he spoke to the issue that people died for the right to vote in Selma, Alabama, and all this kind of stuff. And now he was in front of a group of kids at Chicago State University begging them to utilize that right to vote that so many people died for. My wife shares the story always about the advocacy of Susan B. Anthony to my daughters, overemphasizing, you've got to be involved in this process. You've got to be involved in this process. And I wonder often how people don't reflect on how much was given up, whether including veterans, how much was given up for people to actually participate and vote, and people just ignore that right and take it for granted.
It's, yeah. I mean, it is, I think, disheartening when you look at these kind of numbers, and especially for everything that this city faces ahead of us. Brian Bernardoni, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy at the Chicago Association of Realtors, is part of our roundtable, along with Eric Elk, Director of Strategic Planning at Fulcrum, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by Brian Bernardoni and Eric Elk as we review the mayoral contest now. Here's Lori Lightfoot at her victory celebration.
Today, you did more than make history. You created a movement for change. You know, when we started this journey 11 months ago, nobody gave us much of a chance. We were up against powerful interest, a powerful machine, and a powerful mayor. But I remembered something Martin Luther King said when I was very young. Faith, he said, is taking the first step when you can't see the staircase. Well, we couldn't see the whole staircase when we started this journey, but we had faith, an abiding faith in this city, its people, and in its future.
That's Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot at accepting victory in the last Tuesday's runoff election. So there's a lot of work ahead. I mean, we touched on a little bit about, you know, what's the council going to look like? What is the agenda here? With financial problems that are just massive. The mayor-elect going to Springfield this week. Although it's not exactly that Springfield's got any money to hand out. These are going to be difficult times.
I think challenge number one is just bringing the city back together. And there's the mayor is going to find out very quickly. And, you know, she's incredibly bright, has put together an incredible transition team. When you have people like Sarah Pang and others involved, I mean, this is the kind of transition team that all Chicagoans should be proud of to help her build the administration. But politics and policy collide on the fifth floor. I mean, and you've got to be able to bring the city together. You've got to bring together the factions that contribute to the low voter turnout, those that didn't support you, and really establish in the next 100 days what her total vision looks like moving forward. That's going to send a strong signal down to Springfield. That should send a strong signal to the congressional delegation. That should send a strong signal to the city council that there is a direction, that the city is got a firm leader with a firm grip of the rudder of the city in order to navigate what's going to move forward.
Eric?
Yeah, I think it's super important that that you start to lay that out. You know, you think back to years ago when Mayor Daley and Governor Edgar sometimes didn't always see eye to eye on some things.
Sometimes.
I was being generous.
That was most of the tenure.
Yes.
That was most of my job in Springfield in those days, was writing about the...
But I think it's very important, you know, for this state that the city do well. I mean, we are the heart of the country. You know, we have all the rail, the rivers that pass through here, moving goods and services. And I think, you know, when people talk about jobs and keeping employers here, it's so important that this city is thriving and doing well. And if the governor and the new and mayor-elect can get along and have a plan to get some things done, I think that is critical to the success.
Well, I think the Cook County Board President's also important in this thing.
Absolutely.
One moment. We got a call from Ron. Ron, thank you for joining the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. And Rick, I agree with you. There are a lot of issues. But I think one of the things that she constantly mentioned, what the mayor mentioned, was this whole development and equitable development throughout the city. But I want to ask you, what do you all think would be a priority? I really think that's going to be one, because I really think that's what she ran and used a lot of emphasis on. But maybe you all can talk about that for me. Thank you.
Sure. Again, thank you, Ron.
I agree with you all also. Those numbers were hysterical. And it's just terrible. So, okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Was it historical or hysterical? Because I think it probably both words apply on that one, I think.
I'll just say something real quick and let Brian jump in. But I think her priorities and the things that need to be addressed, while they are probably similar, there's a lot of things that I think that the mayor-elect probably wants to get done, but this financial situation that we have is got to be addressed day one.
On the development side, the home builders and the realtors and others have been involved in some discussions with the administration moving forward to talk about making sure that there's an environment or climate that doesn't scare developers away from Chicago. I think a lot of the campaign rhetoric coming from both President Preckwinkle and her team, as well as from Mayor-elect Lightfoot, was increasing thresholds for affordable housing and all those things. And I think from a development standpoint, deals don't pencil. And you get to the point where Chicago does not look like it's ripe for development. That can close the door. I think as we see this emerge and as she picks a housing and planning development committee chairperson and things along those lines, we'll explain the math, we'll explain how it works. She's very, very, she had the most extensive housing plan of all the mayoral candidates, of the original 14 for sure. But I think when she starts understanding what those numbers are, you'll see, I think, a newer scheme for development that will match what the caller is talking about, that will start reaching into the neighborhoods in a different way. That was very clearly a focus of her campaign.
Well, and certainly, you know, the issue of development to those neighborhoods that are on the west and south sides, that with the crime that they face there, and just, you know, this is part of the multi-stage plan to try to help.
Let's remember something. You know, people hear the words affordable housing and they freak out, but affordable housing pays property taxes too. And those units are going to pay taxes. Those units create jobs and revitalize communities. We're walking into census time too. I mean, we haven't brought up the biggest single issue facing this mayor and in the entire state, which is going to be what the map looks like after all this. These things are all going to collide within only, within the first 18 months of her administration. So I think she's going to have to provide a very quick idea of what the plan looks like, and then she's going to have to realize that there's going to be a lot of balance to it. I think she's going to be awesome.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your post-runoff election roundtable edition of the Sunday Spin.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin as we close out our post-runoff election roundtable with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Gentlemen, one of our text lines, we have the question of, will there be TIF reform? Will there be any reform that TIF districts and the use of TIF districts in non-blighted areas?
I think everything's on the table. Again, Mayor Lightfoot has put forward a very aggressive agenda of reform. I think everything is going to be on the table, whether it be TIF reform and the criteria. I think for the texter, and thank you for texting, you'll get that signal when she picks her planning and development chairperson and her commissioner. You'll get that signal of what that will actually look like. But TIF reform just can't happen in the city. That's going to have to involve Springfield as well.
And, I mean, to me, you know, we've talked about a number of issues here. But to me, I think she needs something significant that the council can kind of rally around with her on and get a victory in the books, so to speak.
She just did.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about as far as policy.
Right. I think she will. I think these next few weeks before she's sworn in, she's already been doing her homework. Obviously, she's been running for what, the last 11 months or so. And she's going to have a really good idea. I think, as Brian said, she's put together, she's surrounded herself with some great people. And I think she'll hit the ground running. No question about that.
She's got to hit crime. She's got to deal with this, and we haven't even talked about it. It's a huge thing. This whole issue of the elected school board, and what that actually looks like. I think she's going to target, as she's already been talking about, Lincoln Yards, saying that she can get a better deal out of it. I think there's going to be a lot of areas where she wants a win. I don't think it's just going to be one. I think it's going to be, there are going to be some distinct categories: housing, taxes, budget, crime. School reform, all of those things. I think she's going to be looking for those victories. I don't think there's going to be a watershed moment, though. I think you need time. Having watched the city council for as long as I have, that council needs time to figure out its caucuses and find out its own agenda as well. I think she made it very clear, and the statement was made to Alderman Burke was, you're not going to see a council war. We're not going to allow that to happen. They're still going to caucus. They're still going to have their own ideas of what's going to happen. And if you look at it from the mayor's office perspective, that's why and I suggested earlier, she's got to set out that agenda. What does she want to get done? And what that timing looks like for those first 100 days. I think the council will be receptive to some of it. If you always got to be careful on the overreach, though. And if anything, if there's going to be an overreach, I do not believe it'll come from the fifth floor. I don't believe it's going to come from intergovernmental. If there's an overreach, it may come from the progressives trying to make a statement right out of the gate. And then they'll find out what the real council and how that thing operates.
Yeah, because I kind of view her as mayor of in some respects likely to face some of the criticism that Barack Obama got as president from the left, is that you said you were progressive, you're not progressive enough. And it's kind of like you know you do have to deal with the confines of government.
Well, I hate to use the Nixon line, but you know you run to the right or you run to the left in the primary, and then you come back to the middle for the general. I mean, you've got to govern from the middle in this town if you're gonna have any level of success. And again, I think from a math standpoint, just strictly a math standpoint, she's got a council that tilts moderate. And even though there's some new progressives, let's, you know, 18 new progressives or progressive leaning folks, it still tilts to the moderate, and she should play to that.
Well, you know, I'm curious what you think, too, is when you mentioned about how, you know, one of the things she needs to do is unify the city. But there's also the unification of politics. And there was a lot of interplay that went on behind the scenes here, and with some potential ramifications.
I think when you look at what there are some very significant battles that were taking place, especially within the Latino community, going back to the primaries for the Cook County Board and some of those General Assembly seats that rolled into the November elections that created Chewy, that have now rolled into the primaries for the city council and rolled into these runoffs. And there are some very, very open wounds within the city council. And I think some of them rippled into the General Assembly, where you saw members of the Illinois General Assembly or certain aldermen that were playing, you know, I hate using a phrase, but playing in other folks' wards, where it will be very interesting to see what the dynamics are for future caucuses. I think the first shot across the bow after the elections was shot by Ray Lopez of the 15th Ward, who was really getting it from not only a couple of members of the General Assembly, but also from other aldermen within the city council that were targeting him. And Alderman Lopez prevailed and is ready for a fight. And that dynamic sometimes is solved by a good conversation, maybe a nice lunch somewhere in Greektown, or it turns into a larger street battle where, okay, you came after me, you lost, now I'm going after yours. And it's going to be tremendously interesting to watch what that happens. But at the end of the day, that council's got to still be able to govern and trust each other on these policy decisions they're going to be making. And I'm kind of fearful, but at the same time looking forward to that first council meeting where you watch these guys on the floor, some of which I think got some bumps and bruises for playing in wards that weren't theirs.
Paybacks can be pretty significant.
Ooh, yeah. I think that, to your point, there's definitely, it was interesting watching all the different state legislators and aldermen getting involved in some of these races. They're definitely going to, and it's gonna impact how, to your point, how these folks caucus. And wasn't it Alderman Lopez who jumped out of the Latino caucus?
No, and it's kind of hard when your last name's Lopez and, oh, I'm not part of the Latino caucus anymore. I mean, it's just, but it goes to the whole idea of caucus too, that we're supposed to be together. We're supposed to be this group, and we're killing each other. I think the unions are going to have to look at that question. I mean, you have some unions that supported aldermen, the same, you know, different aldermen, but both the same union supported them, that were fighting each other. I mean,
and a lot of money was spent. I mean, I think from the realtor standpoint, we were very effective in how we spent our money. Definitely the independent expenditure group did a very good job. I think we won 5 of the 7 races we were playing in. I mean, we had a really good report card. I think if you're a member of SEIU or CTU, I think there's going to be some questions to leadership about how did we pick those races and, you know, and how much money did we spend to come up with a very small result. So, but it's also the politics of who they supported and that they had candidates that they both funded that were killing each other. I mean, that's using my money against against you, and it just doesn't make sense.
But I think with that conflict provides opportunity for the new mayor-elect to come in and provide that leadership and people get behind her in what she's trying to get done.
Also for business organizations.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll put it, you know, the realtors have all, you know, since I've been there, we've been fairly aggressive about how we approach these races. I mean, I'm already triaging, no one wants to hear this, but I'm triaging 2023 right now and what this thing's going to look like. But I'll put it on the table. The business organizations that played, whether it be the realtors or the charter school or the chambers, I mean, we have report cards. A lot of other businesses decided to stay out and, you know, may not reap the benefits of that intense investment that you have to make to play.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors and Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined by Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, and Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors. Just a couple of things to touch on. One, we kind of mentioned it, elected school board, and there's also a teacher's contract coming up, too.
Just small things.
Well, but I mean, that goes back to my... her bouncing the pitch at Sox Park and her aversion to strikes. It's going to be very interesting. And you know, you mentioned about CTU, just even in their rhetoric, they really have not, you know, they're still fighting.
Look, in representing business groups, I never thought I would have to start making a pitch on the for our political action dollars for school boards. The potential is very real there, and I have to remind people, the biggest part of your property tax bill are the schools, whether you live in the suburbs or the city of Chicago. So that we're now politicizing that school board is going to be something.
Well, and there was a bill that passed the House in spring. It's not going anywhere. I mean, that was a show business move. But she has said that, you know, for an elected school board, that these people should have qualifications like being a local school council members, and basically people who are parents, those kinds of things, rather than just
who are from that community,
right? Rather than just being a CTU board.
Well, we talked earlier about agenda setting. That elected school board passing through the House is agenda setting. I mean, that's the first shot across the bow. There are lots of refinements that can happen down the line. From the business community, I can't wait for something to happen. I've got to prepare in advance of it to think about what this thing might ultimately look like. So I think from our end, we've just got to prepare for at least the chance that this could happen.
I want to ask you now about the woman who was defeated last Tuesday for mayor, Tony Preckwinkle, Cook County Board President, and also the Cook County Democratic Chairman. It would seem with the sizable loss that she suffered that could raise questions about not her tenure as County Board President, but as far as Democratic Party Chair.
Tony Preckwinkle is a resilient, strong leader. That's Tony Preckwinkle. That's the entire time I've known her. She is resilient. She's got bounce back opportunities. She's the kind of person I think that, you know, it hurt. I mean, anytime you lose an election, it hurts. I am most certain that she's going back to work on Monday morning and going to go through her due diligence of running the county the way she's running it. And that's who she is. That's her character. That's what she brings to the table. From a political standpoint, I think she's, you know, definitely got to deal with the Kim Fox situation and see if that's an exposure. From the party situation, you know, I think she's long been responsive to what the party leadership sees for her in the future moving forward. Is she going to fight if she's challenged? Absolutely. But she's a resilient person. I don't see her setting, you know, sitting down and wallowing in any of this thing. She sees in her inner core social justice in the hospitals. Those are things that are incredibly important to her. They will remain important. And she's going to bring that public face forward. I have never, in all my time around her, I have never seen her take a self-pity moment. And that's just not who she is. Even as a party leader, that's what she reinforces down. Are there going to be threats? Absolutely. I mean, what do you do with a Melissa Conyers Irvin, who did very, very well in a very traditional knockdown, knock on the door kind of race? How do you look at those? Are those her fronts, or are they going to come together? She's already caucusing. A political obituary for Tony Preckwinkle is premature.
Well, and I'm not saying a political obituary, yeah. But I mean, when you are the county chairman, and you, I mean, obviously politics has changed, and the ability to enforce loyalty and the rewards of patronage are not what they were, but it's still about delivering votes.
We have seen in the series of the two elections an absolute diminishment in many cases of strong ward organizations that don't get that party discipline thing anymore. We've seen maybe a hybrid of a new model, though. I mean, the votes that 19 cranked out, there are other wards that really cranked out and delivered turnout. You may see something new emerge, but let's remember, the party chairmanship is not just determined by the 50 ward committeemen in Chicago. You have 30 suburban townships out there that are going to have a say of what's right. going on. You have some very strong committeemen, whether it's Zuccarelli or Landeck or Harmon or others that are going to have their own, you know, that rely on the county board chairmanship, the county board president and her role as a party leader for a lot of their operations. There's going to be there'll be a come together on that, but what I know about Toni Preckwinkle, she's a fighter, she's tough, she's resilient, and she won't go down without a big fight.
And stay tuned.
You got no choice. I mean, everything that's facing President Mayor-elect Lightfoot is really affecting her as well. I mean, she's got to deal with a lot of the same issues, which is why I'm encouraged that there's been some conversation. Hopefully they can form some kind of relationship that can carry everybody forward.
Well, and I mean, yes, it's we hope these pledges hold true, that they're going to work together.
Oh, they have to. I mean, if they don't, it'll be quite apparent and to the detriment of
the region.
The region. I mean, it'll be bad for business.
Well, I mean, we saw kind of the toxicity that existed between Preckwinkle and Mayor Emanuel.
Right.
You still have Eric and I have talked about this over the several years that we've been on the show together. You still have a very strong and popular governor in Indiana that, I mean, the governor of Indiana is looking for us to screw this thing up. And again, that's why that partnership is so important. There is no wall that surrounds Cook County to keep people out of it. You've got to really build something that's formidable, and that relationship, I believe, is a core one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for, you know, the new Governor Pritzker, looking for Mayor-elect and President Preckwinkle to have a great relationship and be able to work together to move forward on some things.
And we haven't even mentioned the Speaker. I mean, that all
that's a has whole to gel. Other show.
Hey.
That's a whole other show.
Pulaski still calls a lot of shots here, right?
Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois. Gentlemen, thank you so much for these past two Sundays. And
thank you.
Now we move ahead.
Are we moving ahead to the Billy Goat, or what's
it's all part of governing?
There we go.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. I want to thank my guests, Brian Bernadoni from the Chicago Association of Realtors, Eric Elk from Fulcrum, Illinois, a subsidiary of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Gentlemen, again, I can't thank you enough for the insight you brought to the program.
No, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure to work with Eric and this team over here, and most importantly, support Sven Gulli on the Rondo Hatton Awards. It's very important here.
You still had to get that last-minute shot.
Come on.
There, didn't you? Yeah, that's
forever and ever. See you at the opener at Wrigley.
All right. Well, thank you again. And Eric, thank you for joining me as well.